Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Quad Cities Business Beat. I am your host, Lynette Hoyt. I am an independent ambassador for Plexus Worldwide. We focus on gut health and overall health from the inside out. I wanted to say a little bit about today, because I don't usually talk about products or anything, but I'm going to start. I tried our new Lean Whey Shake today.
Chocolatey.
It was phenomenal. It was the first time I'd had the chocolate. It's lean. It's made with whey, but it literally tastes like chocolate cake batter.
It was way good.
It was way good.
And did you guys bring a sample?
No, but I will next week.
This is not fun.
I know. I gotta get on my game. I always talk about these businesses, and I never talk about my own. So yeah. I'm gonna have like a whole plethora of Plexus products from now on. I'll just bring a little.
There we go.
And basket,
maybe like a little
banner, and we'll have balloons and all that kind of stuff. No, I'm kidding. Okay, but anyway,
kazoos too.
I hate kazoos. Remember when Harlan had that kazoo? That was not a good day at the Hoyt house. It was not pretty. Anyway, it's a great meal replacement shake. The vanilla tastes like vanilla cake batter, and the chocolate tastes like chocolate cake batter. So, I mean, I'm not lying. There's no gritty taste. Both of those are made with whey, and then we also have a vegetarian one that is made with pea protein.
What is whey? So
whey is
It's way good.
It's a protein our product has milk in it. The whey one has milk in it. So for people who don't want dairy.
I need to be big and strong.
Anyway, strong. We are joined at the table as we usually are with my husband, Zach.
Woohoo! Zach the man.
Mr. San Martin of Prescott Night Out.
Hello, how are you doing?
And our guest of the day is Mr. John Coomer, who I have known for many years.
Many years. What does many years consist of?
And she's still my friend.
I know.
That must be a good thing.
I know.
And I've seen him in bike shorts.
Yeah. That's a scary thing. Yes. You know, we could talk about that, but let's not.
I was like, you know what? We should have all came to with their biker shorts today.
Uh-huh. Well, I do have to do a plug because I did work for the MS Society, but prior to that, I have MS. I was diagnosed almost 10 years ago, and that's when I met Mr. Coomer. He was part of the MS group that does the 150-mile bike ride. When is that coming up?
It's in April, I believe.
April now. Coming yes, up. Uh-huh. So if you're itching to ride 150 miles...
Over two days.
Anybody can reach out to me, and I will get you the contact information. But I have known John that long because we have a soft spot for multiple sclerosis. So we've known each other a long time, and I really appreciate you being on the show today.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun.
We are kind of fun people. Uh-huh. You know, we are kind of doing it a little different today because this isn't a business that people actually go to. Don't show up on John's doorstep to want to buy anything, but I think it's really an important topic to talk about business consulting and what the trends are for, you know, the area. And, you know, things are different now. A lot of people do remote work, a lot of people travel, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, John, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you end up in Prescott and all the goods?
Sure, and going back a little ways, I think, is important. We've lived in Arizona. The Coomer family has lived in Arizona since 1966. And that's important because it gives you an idea of the character of my parents and how they made decisions. And hopefully that's come through to me and on to the next generations. But I have a brother who lives in Scottsdale now, and he was very sick at the time. And the doctors told my parents, if you don't get this boy to a dry climate, he's not going to make it till summer.
Wow.
My dad quit his job, rented a U-Haul, sold off as much as they could without knowing anything of where we're going. We moved to Phoenix, ended up in Tempe.
we need to find the driest place in the world.
Yeah.
Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, that was it. They said Albuquerque or Phoenix, and for whatever reason, they chose Phoenix.
We're on our way.
We're in Arizona now. And I think that the way he made that decision, the way my parents made that decision, was family first. We do what we need to do, and I try to do that. I try to do what's right because it's right, and that's even on my Facebook page. You know, what is your philosophy? Do what's right because it's right. And so, anyhow, I'm not a spring chicken. You can see by these earned gray hairs in the beard.
I was going to say, the other day, we were talking to a politician, and he was like, I think that's the reason why it's like that.
Uh-huh. You know, somebody said you should dye it. And I said, what do you mean? I dyed all that gray to look... No, but they're very much earned. One time I was teasing my dad maybe 15 years ago, and he said, I told him that when you were my age, you had a lot more gray. And he told me one thing. He says, there's one other thing I had. And I said, what was that? He said, you. Oh. But, yeah, pretty much. But I am a veteran. I spent 4 years in Jimmy Carter's army. I had the opportunity to go to Greece and spend a year there. And then they had my comeuppance were going to Texas, and I was at Fort Hood for the rest of my time in the army, which at the time, and maybe even now, I think they said that was about, if it was a nation, that was about the seventh largest army in the world.
Wow.
With two divisions and the air cavalry and the medical and all that there. It was a great experience. I have an undergrad degree in special ed, which I have always never really used as a special educator. I was the executive director of Special Olympics in Arizona for a number of years, for 5 years, and that's probably the closest thing to using it that I had. But I fell in love while I was in the Army. One of my extra duties was running a little unit lounge, which was like a small business in the middle of nowhere in northern Greece. And I fell in love with that aspect of the job. And that sort of motivated me, ironically and sort of funny, to earn a Master's of Business Administration, which... Oh, that's not my phone. Good. the rest is sort of history. And I joke that at different times in my career, how the special ed degree came in handy, working with soldiers, working with doctors, working with elected officials, so on and so forth. But it really is a part of me, always has been, wanting to help people who have disabilities. My youngest brother, Dan, who lives here in Prescott, has Down syndrome. He's 55. Yeah, 55, and he's doing extremely well, and he's lived in a group home with the Hojoni Foundation for a long time, has worked at Yavapai Exceptional Industries for a number of years.
Great organization.
A great group.
Is that YEI?
Mm-hmm. YEI, Yay. What a great mm-hmm. group, yeah.
Yeah, I like the benches they make.
Oh, they're pretty cool, and the tables. And,
yeah, they're
very
crafty.
It's sad how Brad Newman is so shy.
I know,
and such,
right?
An introvert, right?
Yeah, it is. He doesn't get the name out there at all.
No, I'm just kidding.
We're kidding.
Hides under a rock.
That's right, yeah. Entertaining is never on his mind.
No.
What a great guy.
Totally
great guy. Yeah.
Good energy.
You asked me how I ended up here in Prescott. Well, I do have, I've done extensive work. I was in franchising for a number of years in Tucson, worked for Alpha Graphics, was responsible for management development and the support of all their franchises in the Western U.S. But I made a decision for family to not be on the road as much. It's hard being a road warrior, especially when you have two small children. And that's when I moved, and I was the executive director of Special Olympics, did that for 5 years, and moved on to the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, where I was the chapter president in Arizona for a few years, and love the cause. Obviously, I still volunteer today when I can. But while I was there, we came to the realization that our kids will be going to middle school soon, and we were small town folks. And I talked to some staff members, and through some networking, I learned of a position at Yavapai College, which was the director of advancement. And for whatever reason, they liked me, and we moved, and we've lived in Chino Valley since 1997, the longest I've ever lived anywhere, and absolutely love it.
Great.
No plans on moving or relocating. We hope to retire here.
Great.
So from Yavapai College, I'd say if there's any legacy, that legacy would be the fact that in the year 2000, Yavapai College passed a $69 million bond election, which basically rebuilt all of their campuses, added the big growth in Prescott Valley, the big growth in Prescott, Chino Valley campus out at Old Home Manor, Verde Valley, Sedona. And a lot of the success that they've had has a lot to do with the facilities they've built and the programs they've built, the CTEC program that John Morgan is done an incredible job with, and so I'm very proud of that time. But being in a highly visible position, I got to know a lot of folks in throughout the county. I got to know Yavapai County extremely well, because in order to do anything, my job was marketing, and marketing is always driven by research. A lot of people don't realize that you really can't make a decision to run a bond election or a tax-based election where the voters are approving something without knowing what the voters want and or what your market wants, and so I've always taken that to heart. Well, I ended up moving to healthcare administration for a couple of reasons. We decided we didn't want to leave the area. And then a buddy of mine who is a physician, I've known him since he was very young, in scenic Florence, Arizona, go Gophers, asked me if I would help him with his practice. And I said, I don't know healthcare. He says, I don't need you to know healthcare. I need you to know business. So we went down there and helped him in Florence for another 4 or 5 years. And day one, we found stuff, and it was very obvious stuff. And what became very obvious is running a health practice is not rocket science. What the docs do is a lot closer to rocket science, but they're not business people.
Right.
And sometimes, because of budgetary reasons or whatever, they put their trust in folks who have a medical background, and then things like accounts receivables management, negotiating insurance contracts, human resource, staying on top of human resource laws and following up on paperwork, paying payroll taxes. Those are all concepts that oftentimes in the small business arena are areas that can be neglected. They aren't always, but I would say that every medical practice that I've been to has had difficulty in staying on top of their insurance contracts, because there are so many insurance companies, there are so many contracts, access providers change every 5 years. And so there's a tremendous opportunity. And at that time was the time the government was starting to develop the incentives to move from paper charting, which the docs right. still love today unless they're young and they've never seen the paper chart before, to electronic health records. And I helped actually, I've done four or five movements either from paper to electronic, or from a older electronic to a more modern and comprehensive electronic health record. But
I'm sitting here, I'm like, what else does this guy have on to offer? I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm sitting here, I'm just like guided into this like educational moment where it's just like, wow, you have an extensive background.
Well, and I have fun doing it.
Good.
You know,
I
love
that's
working.
That's the best part about it.
I especially love working with primary care doctors, because, you know, no offense to any other doctors, I've worked with dermatologists and surgeons, and but the family care, family practice, pediatricians, internal medicine docs, are really there for their patients. You know, they are the relationship builders in healthcare. Whereas a surgeon, he may see a part of you while you're
right.
under, and he'll meet with you once or twice and then move on.
There's no relationship building.
Yeah, and
there.
hopefully they won't have to see you
right.
again.
Right.
Now I have a relationship with several of my docs, especially my eye doctors in the last 3 years. But that's because I've had a lot of eye problems, but unless you're a regular, your goal is to not be a regular.
Right.
Especially. The healthcare, to stay away from it.
Absolutely, if you can, but the preventative side of it is critical for all of us, especially for men as we get older. That's when stuff starts going wrong. And
so would you consider yourself a fixer? Would people want to hire you to come and kind of clean up things, kind of get things in order for someone else to come in as
a bar rescue, bar rescue 101?
I know. Are you like the consultant that comes and fixes, or are you?
Because I actually know just more of an people interim. That have, you know, practices that are in town, and they're just like, we are not trying to focus on people with insurance, but people without insurance,
right?
And I'm like, I don't know what kind of concept that is, but it sounds great to me.
Yeah, there's another newer trend because insurance companies are very difficult to deal with.
No.
And they're expensive. And
it's getting worse.
A lot of folks, some doctors are doing what you're calling, they call them boutique practices, where they accept a set fee for a year, unlimited visits, sure. So on and so forth.
Yeah, they just set one up in Prescott Valley, I think.
I'm not familiar with the providers locally who have done that. I've worked in the more traditional settings, but insurance is very difficult, and most of the contracts have a three-year escalator where your rates that you get paid increase by 2% each year, and then trying to maintain all those, and then at the year three, noticing them that you want to renegotiate because they become what's called an evergreen contract that doesn't change, and you're sort of limited into what you can do. And so to stay on top of all that and renegotiate every 3 years, recognize that in 2018 was the year that the Access went out to bid. And if you accept Access, you have to stay on top of that and renegotiate your contracts there. There's just so many things to stay on top of on the business side of healthcare. And not a small part of it is educating patients.
Sure.
Because it's hard to be a patient. You don't know, I have insurance, I'm going to the doctor, I'm covered.
And I just want
to
give my card
you got a lot of more things to worry about besides it.
Yeah, yeah. And then you realize,
I'm dying.
Then you get a big bill for your surgery or for whatever, and you say, what, I have insurance. Well, you have a $4,000 deductible. That's your part you have to pay. But the good news is what you're paying is the negotiated rate with the doctors. The other thing people don't understand is that they see a doctor's charge of $150 and then they write off a portion. And that's another confusing aspect because they actually get paid whatever they negotiate with whatever
insurance company.
Which could
have been 75.
Exactly. And it's not really a write-off. It's really the difference between our normal charges and what insurance
you
pays.
Should do a class on explaining insurance to people.
I would love to do that.
No kidding, because there's people that I mean they have no idea.
Yeah.
You give me that packet here, they're like, here, sign it, don't read and
exactly.
sign. I'm just like
exactly, you need to know what
don't know what all that stuff means. And
yeah,
you know.
I signed up for my employer's insurance because this one was free for me. Well, what's free for me is a high deductible.
Exactly.
And they don't understand what that means. And
exactly.
So a lot of times people get into trouble simply because they have a medical condition or they have, and you know about medical conditions,
mm-hmm.
I know,
mm-hmm.
that are very expensive. And there are actually several bankruptcies due to healthcare expenses,
yeah,
individual
absolutely.
Bankruptcies. So,
back onto your business then. So what are you trying? What are you doing?
There's a number of things. One of the things that is interim leadership or an interim project. So a large group wants to open an office in Cottonwood, but they don't have the staffing to do that. I can come in there. I've opened up satellite offices, recruited physicians, set up systems. I can come in and mentor. One of the funnest things in my career has been helping younger employees. It came to light when I accepted the job with my physician friend in Florence. He had very talented staff, but they didn't have any direction. And to this day, one of the medical assistants worked on her associate in business, and we worked very closely together to transition to her when I had left and came back up here to run the pediatric group up here. So
awesome.
So you're going to focus just on healthcare. I mean, based off of, you know, what I'm talking with you about, you found a love for this.
And I think there's a need in that area. You know, I'm equally versed with nonprofit organizations, board development. I serve on boards.
So you're going to stay in health, or are you going to just, if anybody comes to you, you're going to be like, I am going to help you.
If I think I can help them and I take a look, then I can, then I will.
And this isn't since podcasts are everywhere, somebody's going to hear from everywhere is going to hear this. I mean, you're not opposed to traveling.
No, not at all.
At a blocks of time to get a project. It's kind of more project oriented,
right.
Wouldn't you say?
Let's say a surgery center in Cheyenne, Wyoming is going through a transition, and they don't think they'll be able to hire somebody, but they need somebody to come in, evaluate, help them with that transition and hiring process. I'd be happy to go to Cheyenne, Wyoming if needed.
As long as it's during the months of
May through September.
Yeah, that applies to Wyoming, Idaho, Montana, Minnesota.
And if you need an assistant to Hawaii, you let me know.
Absolutely. That's year-round. I'll go to Hawaii, Florida year-round. Yeah.
I'd be like, you know, during the cold months, I'm going to be really busy in Hawaii. There was one thing that you just brought up right now that was kind of like on point with some of the people that are in nursing schools that are, you know, obviously getting their certificates, their mm-hmm. degrees or whatever it may be called. Are you going to help with, I mean, because you did say something like that. You're going to be like a job consultant type of person. Can you place these guys?
Help them hiring?
I wouldn't see myself as a placement person, but I will help them recruit appropriately. But, you know, my guidance to those who are looking at nursing school, go on and get your bachelor's degree with an MBA, and you'll be employed very well for the rest of your life.
Because I think you did say outside that there is a shortage of nurses.
There's a huge shortage of technicians, RNs, medical assistants. The field is wide open.
Here in Yavapai County?
Pretty much everywhere. Okay. You know, if I look at healthcare administration, most of them have a requirement of a BSN Bachelor of Science mm-hmm. in Nursing. And if I had a Bachelor of Science in Nursing with this background, I could go anywhere, anytime, mm-hmm. Which I don't.
No.
You know, hindsight's right, 2020.
Right, exactly.
You just started, man. You might as well go to school again.
Yeah. Why not, right?
Why not? Don't stop the education.
Really, just need the RN, not the...
We need that beard white, man.
Yeah. Well, if I'm like my dad, it'll get there before too long. So. Yeah.
So what is the benefit of an interim director then?
Well, I think the benefit of somebody with experience, I can go in... And I can, I'm very good at troubleshooting. I'm very good at looking at financial statements, talking to people, listening, observing process. And whether it's culture, one group I went into, there was a huge culture issue that was scaring away their docs, and they had lost four doctors and had another couple ready to go.
By just quitting or death?
By quitting.
Okay.
By quitting. No.
No, it's a real, I mean, seriously.
It could be a thing.
I've been watching too many documentaries. They may have killed them off too, but you know, we were able to turn that around. Their biggest problem was they had more patients than they had capacity to serve them, and so patients, they're starting to lose patients because they had to wait a month to 2 months to get in. And so one of the docs who had left called me one day, and I said, I hear you're doing good things there. I'd like to come back part-time, and here's what I'd like to do. And he came back. He was 78 years old, energetic, an incredibly wonderful doctor, and worked another 3-4 years, brought in a specialist, a couple of other, the docs who were going to leave all stayed. We were able to bring in a couple more docs, and they're pretty much thriving. And we opened a satellite office, which didn't thrive after I had left, but that was a question of culture and capacity. And then we started working on systems, you know, accounts receivable from patients and insurance companies. Insurance companies often, if there's a little mistake in the billing, they won't pay you. So they have to have what's called a clean claim. So we worked on with the billing staff to get that up and running, and then we looked at our accounts receivable from patients, and what was showing in the books was 26% over 90 days. That's never good. And by the time I had left, that was down to 6% and working its way down. Part of it was just not very clean records, but a part of it was the lack of consistent follow-up, explanation, answering questions because they don't understand insurance, not collecting up front. And in healthcare, you almost have to collect up front because once a surgery is done, it's done.
Yeah, but like, that's my spleen.
You can't redo the colonoscopy. You can't take the colonoscopy back.
You can't be like a contractor. I'm going to go and I'm going to break everything out. I don't know if you've ever seen that type of thing.
Repo.
You don't want to.
Repo that knee replacement.
It's actually a movie. It's actually a character, Repo Man.
Well, the one of the funnier ones is in pediatrics. It's
give me that heart.
Newborn circumcisions. You can't give them the foreskin back. You know?
Yeah. I mean, this is real stuff. I mean, okay, it so is. This is a really kind of like not direct question, but what do you see in the healthcare field that needs a little bit changed that will be able to help the American citizen? I mean, this is a real legit deal. That's because I look at this stuff and I'm just like, this is crap. And don't get me wrong, I love what everybody does and I love everybody with their education and how they're supposed to help people. But as far as like the cost and stuff compared to other countries, is there something that you could or would implement here?
You know, that's a very high level question and all of us have our ideas on that. And you know, the Affordable Health Care Act ended up not being very affordable. That word just never came through with that. You know, I can say that in my observation. I think
it was abbreviated.
Yes.
There was something behind the affordable. It was like, after you died.
Health care is free.
They should have looked at you will afford.
It's sort of sad, but what has happened is that's, and I'll talk about more of the effects, but I think the biggest problem with the Affordable Care Act was offering individual insurance plans through whatever insurance company wants to do it, and with the people who are coming for that insurance are those with have pretty significant health needs. Mm-hmm. So they go in and they get a subsidized rate, let's say $300 a month or something like that, and then they have $150,000 in claims. Well, insurance companies cannot make money on individual policies like that. You know, there are a lot of people who think we need a single payer structure like a number of the other countries, Canada, Norway, some of them. But I don't know how that can happen because the insurance companies are so powerful. Mm-hmm. They're so big. I can't see that culture changing. So how to fix it? Well, I have a number of ideas. I think the government should be strong-arming some folks for drug costs, prosthetic costs.
Yeah, I've seen a few of that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
One guy just buys some sort of something for diabetes, and then he hikes it up so far.
Right,
and then
right.
Then next thing you know, he's sitting on the Senate floor.
Or they have, yeah, or something like
they're
that.
They're like, man, but can't charge them $2,000 for this pill.
Well, yeah. Americans pay for all the research and development.
Yep.
And
that's right.
The rest of the world doesn't. And I think that's part of it. And then the other part is greed. What was it a couple of years ago? There was one generic medication for a certain so this company bought it and immediately increased the price tenfold. Yeah, and it was still a little bit. Still a little bit cheaper, and EpiPens were at one time $70.
Now they're $700.
Now they're like $700, and so you know we see. I think that as a nation we have to do something about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And it extends to other things like screws for surgery. When they screw your bone, that's $150 a screw or something.
Wow,
like
I'd be like, dude, you should see this drawer I have of all these extra screws.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I have parts here, you know. And that wasn't cheap either.
Maybe we can start salvaging after everybody starts dying off. Yeah. Like, the start salvaging this stuff.
I had a knee replacement, complete, you know, total knee replacement in 2015. Let's see, old people, here we go again. And the insurance company paid between the hospital and the docs over $80,000 for it. You know, that's a lot of money. That is a lot of money.
For one knee?
Yeah. And it's hard to make money when you, even if they're charging the geezers $1,000 a month.
I mean, even for $80,000, I'm just like, man, you could have just like hung out with the pain in your own home for $80,000.
I'll take 40. I'll deal with this.
Right.
Oh, man. Yeah. Lowest bidder gets it.
So, but then.
That's what should happen. There should be a bidding system out there. Where it is the same as, you know, you going to buy a car.
It's like price line.
I need a best deal right now. price line for docs.
Well,
yeah.
Do you really want
somebody who's going to lowball that quote? I don't know.
Lynn and I live by, when it comes to your health, you go to the best.
Well,
But here's where you're on. Here's where you're on with that is that patients have to be good consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I'm not, I'll just say rural hospitals oftentimes are more expensive than urban hospitals. And so that same knee replacement, if I'd have gone someplace else, may have been $30,000 or, and then other surgeries, if they can be done on an outpatient basis safely, they're doing joint replacements in outpatient surgery centers now for the right patients, because it's more comfortable to heal in your own home.
Sure.
And I would have been a candidate for that. I might have done that. That's probably the most painful thing I've ever had happen, is that knee replacement. The PT. Mm. I learned that physical therapists are all sadists. They just push you, and then when you think you're done, they said, okay, one more time. Ah!
You lied to me.
Okay, so let's talk about, and what else do you think that we should know?
Well, I think being a good consumer and knowing your insurance benefits as a patient. And number two, there's two, I was mentioning this earlier, it's not quite this simple, but there are two camps of physicians and providers. One that wants to be employed, and one group that staunchly wants to be independent and not apart. Sure. And, I work for a group that was acquired by the hospital system, and the docs loved it because they didn't want to be owners of a business anymore. They didn't want to mess with that for a number of the reasons that we talked about. And we were profitable at that time. We were pretty profitable, but they'd much rather be accountable to somebody else and take care of patients. Another doctor locally retired because he didn't like running his own business, and then a local hospital came back, leased the building, opened up a practice, and he came back to work 2-3 days a week because he loves his patients.
Sure.
And so there's that camp, and then there's the other camp that want to have nothing to do with big business. But the bottom line is, when you're negotiating insurance contracts, you have to have some sort of differentiator. So if you want to be an independent and get paid well enough to actually have a profitable business, because you can't have nonprofits can't be nonprofit, but they have to have some sort of a proposition. So if they're the only specialty, there's one ENT group, your nose and throat group in this market, and if they don't have a very good contract with an insurance payer, let's say Access, and we say they have to be willing to make some tough decisions. If they're the only ones, Access needs them in this market. Otherwise, they have to send patients to the Verde Valley, Phoenix, or elsewhere. You have to be willing to say, I need to renegotiate. And if they say no, I'll be willing to drop them.
Right.
If you can't make profit on that. And so, you have something they need, and so they need to be willing to pay for it. And it's hard, because physicians don't get paid more routinely. Those around them do, whether they are the suppliers, the durable medical, the implants, the medications, all of them seem to see incredible growth in what they're getting paid. And sometimes the providers get squeezed out. So to you providers, and to you accountants who work with medical providers, because that's where my business, I think, will come from, is you need help. If you need that help, I'm ready to come. I think I can look in, if you're willing to listen to the truth, and let me be a bad guy if you need a bad guy, whether it's a cultural issue at your at your business, whether it's a supply cost or a process and taking care of patients. We know there's a shortage of primary care. We know there's a shortage of a number of specialties and of support staff. Bring somebody in who knows the business and is willing to help and spend that time with you, either on a consultative basis, an interim basis, a project management, a staff development. I think I can help you.
That's awesome.
I can't wait till you change the whole system.
I don't think that's probably not going to happen.
No,
I think I'll retire first.
Somebody's going to hear this and be like, you know what? We're going to help you change the system.
We're just
going to
change the system.
You're the leading guy.
Yeah. Speaking of payers, I'm a Medicare guy later this year, so I can't wait.
Something's to look forward to.
Oh yeah.
So John, in a nutshell, What are you willing to do? Come in, help, fix,
straighten it out. Yeah, I'm willing
to stick to healthcare, mostly healthcare businesses.
I think I can help. I think I can help a number of nonprofits as well. You know, volunteer management and how people use volunteers. The same business systems that healthcare has, nonprofits and other businesses have. Unless you're a cash business, which there aren't too many of those anymore, managing receivables, looking at credit cards, managing. One place I went to, we save $5,000 a month by eliminating the standard phone service and going with a cloud-based PBX. So technology, I've done a number of technology.
You're like, let me go ahead and save you some money, and then you can pay me now.
Yeah, I don't want that much today, because if it's part-time anyhow. But, there's just so many things that you just, troubleshooting is needed. And so even if it's a profitable business, there may be areas that they need help with. And so I guess I'm talking to a lot of accountants who see all this.
Sure.
They see all, and they understand metrics, and they understand standards and things like that. I'm talking to you guys because I know that a number of the jobs that I've had, I've been referred by you guys to those practices. So... But I'm willing to help any group, but I'm not one of those consultants. I've worked with a consultant. I went into one place, had a consultant who said, "Is there anything I can help you with?" Now, he didn't dig into stuff. He was just collecting his couple $1,000 a month and made a phone call and would stop by and go talk to people.
Right.
And
you're willing to just delve in.
Yeah. I'm willing to hold hands, teach. Learn their chart of accounts, learn what their patient base is, who they need to market to. I mean, that's, you know, if it's a specialty medical care, they get their patients from primary care medical care, you know, and so, but they also have to have a brand that's recognizable in the community. So if you're referring to a certain surgeon, there are reasons to refer to them, and that practice needs to go out there and make rounds to the primary care docs and be visible to them. So I'm willing to do that at that level.
Great.
Is to help them target, to help them understand market research, how to get a feedback from their patients, learn what they're doing right and wrong, recommendations on where to advertise and not. I guess Prescott E-News is one that we should advertise
absolutely. So to wrap it up, how does someone who's listening to this podcast that could be anywhere, how do they get a hold of you?
Two ways. Three. One is on LinkedIn, John Coomer. Just look John Coomer up on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I think there's probably a few of them, but there's only one in the Prescott area.
Okay.
Another one is to call me. My cell phone is area code 928-925-3211. And I don't have a fancy brand. I've chosen not to incorporate or to structure a business because it's me you're getting. I don't want to have employees. So you can email me at jcoomer, J-C-O-O-M-E-R, at rocketmail, like a rocket ship, but rocketmail.com.
Awesome. Well, we wish you all the best. We can't wait to hear that you got a call from this podcast.
So we always try to come up with something, whether it's a tagline or a t-shirt
hashtag.
Idea.
What's his hashtag, you guys?
You got one?
Dr. Whisperer.
Dr. Whisperer.
Hashtag Dr. Whisperer.
Hashtag Dr. Whisperer. That's awesome. Or Medical Whisperer. I'm not sure which one. But
Practice Whisperer.
John Coomer, the Dr. Whisperer.
Maybe Practice. Yeah. Practice Whisperer. Oh my gosh.
I'm feeling it. We're going to have to work on this one. Hey, but I'm pretty sure there's some sort of whisperer in there.
I didn't see you bring anything to the table on it.
So. Whisperer.
I say Practice Whisperer. But
the Practice Whisperer, Consulted Whisperer.
But to me, Practice Whisperer. I'm practicing.
Oh, that's
that's why I also the medical whisperer.
I mean, like Zach got the job.
Well, thank you so much.
We'll work on that.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. I learned a lot today.
Yeah,
I just sat here. I didn't really ask a lot of questions,
I'm
fascinated.
Level of seeing something new and changed. Just because John says that it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Well, yeah, right.
Look for the trends, people. Look for the trends. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And like I said, stay in touch with us. And Again, my name is Lynette Hoyt. I am an independent ambassador for Plexus Worldwide.
Boom.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week with Black Butterfly.
Thank you.
Artesian chocolates.
Oh.